Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 29th of September. Later this week in Milwaukee, the 6th Biennial State of Lake Michigan and the 9th Annual Great Lakes Beach Association conferences will be taking place. The conferences convene elected officials, scientists, resource managers, planners, students, and others who are working to improve Great Lakes beaches and also Lake Michigan and other lakes in the Great Lakes. So we thought that the time is most appropriate to talk about the state of the Great Lakes. There are a lot of things happening on a national level here as well, including money appropriated under the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative led by the EPA. We'll get an update on that. I believe that the Senate took up a spending bill recently that would increase funding for Great Lakes cleanup. And what about the health of the Great Lakes? What are the problems? We've talked frequently on this show about runoff pollution. Is that still a major problem? Invasive species, we'll be talking about contaminated bottomlands. We'll have two guests with us during the course of this hour. Todd Ames is Water Division Administrator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Vice Chair of the Great Lakes Commission, and will be one of the keynote speakers at the conferences later this week in Milwaukee. And later on, Cameron Davis will join us, Senior Advisor to the Administrator of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. So all of that's coming up, and we'll welcome your phone calls. We always do, in case you forgot the number for some reason. Here it is, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And we start with Todd Ames, Water Division Administrator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Hello, Todd. Thank you very much for being with us.
Happy to be with you this morning, Kathleen.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So there are two. Now, we got two conferences going on later in Milwaukee. What's the difference between them?
Well, the one looks specifically at the state of Lake Michigan, and then the other one looks more at beach health issues and issues related to contaminated sediments all across the Great Lakes Basin.
Okay. And it doesn't make sense to look specifically at Lake Michigan, or is there so much interconnection here that you simply can't look at Lake Michigan and ignore Huron or Superior or other Great Lakes?
Well, obviously, they're connected, and you do need to look at them regionally and as a whole as part of the Great Lakes Basin. But obviously, for anybody, all of your listeners well know, Lake Michigan's a pretty big place. So each one has its own, each one of the five Great Lakes has its own challenges and also very much regional perspective. And so over the many years the people have been working on this, we have found that not only has there been groups that look at the Great Lakes from a basin-wide regional perspective, but also groups that take a particular interest in each of the five lakes.
And the particular challenges for Lake Michigan are what?
There are some particular challenges for Lake Michigan. Although, as you already noted, Lake Michigan actually, from a hydrologic perspective, is really interconnected most with Lake Huron, and in that sense, those two lakes kind of act as very much as kind of one ecosystem, whereas there's a fair bit of more difference from Lake Erie, Lake Ontario, and Lake Superior. Lake Erie being the shallowest of the five, with Lake Superior obviously being the deepest. And that creates some different challenges depending on the lake. In the case of Lake Michigan, I think it has had some of the most pronounced impacts in terms of what aquatic invasive species have done in terms of the food web within Lake Michigan, and certainly also because of the amount of development that we have around Lake Michigan, it has been more impacted by things like polluted runoff than has a less developed lake like Lake Superior.
Mm-hmm. This problem of polluted runoff seems to be one that nags us and has for years and years. What are we doing about that? Can you tell me about the extent of it, how long we've known about it, and if we've been able to make things better?
Sure. It is, you know, there's humans have had an impact on our waterways all across the country, and certainly the Great Lakes is no exception. And the impacts tend to come from a couple of different places. One is from so-called point sources, end of pipe, if you will, types of pollutants. And then non-point pollution or polluted runoff comes from a variety of sources, as the name implies. So it could be runoff in the form of sediment coming off from a farm field, or it could be runoff in terms of what the water, when it rains, picks up in terms of debris off from paved surfaces, stormwater, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And we've certainly been aware of both for many years, and the Clean Water Act passed in the early 1970s was designed to try to address those concerns. Not surprisingly, we have made a lot of progress thanks to the Clean Water Act, but first and foremost on the standpoint of point sources, quite honestly, because they're easier. You know where they're coming from, you know where they're going to in terms of coming through a pipe, and we've been able to do a lot as a nation to reduce the amount of pollution coming from point sources and, as a result, the impact on our waterways. And now we're seeing that by far the most significant problem out there are these non-point sources or places where you have polluted runoff. There's a great deal being done, both from urban and agricultural side, both at the federal level as well as at the state and local level. But it is just because of the sheer scope and variety of pollutant sources, it is our most vexing challenge right now in terms of water quality.
Mm-hmm. And does a lot of that have to do with chemicals, those we use in agriculture, those we use on our lawns, or would that be overstating the issue?
That's certainly part of it, but it can be something as simple as not just those sorts of chemical pollutants, but it can be something just as simple as soil erosion. Even if that soil's perfectly clean, if you've got a highly erodible area and that soil is winding up in our waterways when it should remain on the land, that in and of itself can create a very significant challenge. The sheer amount of water that we can get off from paved surfaces can create lots of scouring and challenges in our waterways, even if that water is relatively clean.
Mm-hmm.
So all the ways that we have altered our ecosystem has altered its impact with our waterways.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what the source of this report is. The news report is kind of vague here, but I guess it isn't. There was an internal watchdog report published last week by the Environmental Protection Agency saying, and make this more specific to Lake Michigan, it could take 77 years to clean up contaminated sediment in the Great Lakes at the current pace of remediation.
That's referring to those places where we have contaminated sediments in areas that have been designated for cleanup as areas of concern across the Great Lakes. We have five of those areas of concern in Wisconsin, four of which are on Lake Michigan, including Milwaukee River and Milwaukee Harbor, some concerns relative to the Superfund cleanup in particular is what that report was referring to when a site's designated as cleanup needing to be cleaned up with Superfund dollars. So in Wisconsin, we've made a great deal of progress in terms of dealing with those contaminated sediments. We've got cleanups underway in both the Milwaukee River and the Kinnikinnick River. Mm. The largest PCB cleanup in the world is well underway on the Fox River up going into Green Bay. So we're making some good progress in Wisconsin, but certainly across the Great Lakes Basin, just the sheer size of the problem and legacy that we have from our industrial era, manufacturing era, is still something that we're left with, and we will be taking a number of years to clean up.
What do you think about this 77 years figure?
Yeah, I actually haven't had a chance to review that internal report in any great detail. But there's no question that some of these Superfund sites do take a very long time. Certainly in the case of the PCB cleanup in the Fox River, we are, as I say, well underway in terms of the actual cleanup removal of the sediments in that river. That's taken a couple of decades to get that in place. It is it took us, unfortunately, many decades where we were causing these problems to the waterways, and unfortunately, it takes more than a few years to get them cleaned up.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any, I'm sure you have high hopes always, but do you have high hopes for what will happen from these conferences? Are you targeting certain things that you want the federal government to give you money for, or you want people to really address that we haven't addressed? What will happen from all of this?
Well, Kathleen, I'm very excited about these conferences. I have been doing public policy work in Great Lakes issues for 30 years now. I was born and raised in Michigan, spent over a decade in Ohio, and have been in Wisconsin for 15 years. So it's really, the Great Lakes are part of me, and for those years, we have had our ups and downs in terms of feeling like we were headed in the right direction and that progress could be made. I really do think this is a real watershed time for the Great Lakes. We have a clear blueprint for action that called the Great Lakes Regional Collaboration that was developed in 2005. It has become the basis for the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative that President Obama identified in February, and looks like it's going to bring somewhere between $400 to $475 million in new money to bear on federal money to clean up the Great Lakes in the next federal budget. So we are really poised both in terms of having a plan to address these significant challenges and having some new federal resources to bring to bear on them. So put that all together with the incredible, enthusiastic dedication and energy on the part of folks across the Great Lakes Basin to address the most significant freshwater resource on the planet. And I'm really optimistic good things are ahead for us in the next couple of years.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Todd Ames is our guest, the first half hour, Water Division Administrator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and Vice Chair of the Great Lakes Commission. We're looking at the health of the Great Lakes as this week will mark the start of two big conferences, the 6th Biennial State of Lake Michigan and the 9th Annual Great Lakes Beach Association Conference, bringing together scientists and politicians and resource managers, students, people who are working to improve Great Lakes beaches and Lake Michigan. So let's go to you in a moment. 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls now, starting with Adam from Marinette. Hello, Adam.
Hi, Kathleen. What a wonderful show this morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if the guests could comment on the condition of Green Bay itself, the body of water. I remember a couple of years ago in the summer I read, I think it was even like a 2 or 3 day feature in the Green Bay Press Gazette regarding the bay and how, if I'm not mistaken, this was a few years ago, but something like county commissioners or someone had only recently realized that all these septic systems were leaking and that farmers in the area were still just kind of piling their manure at the edges of their fields. And so the Door Peninsula is almost entirely bedrock. And as a result of that, all of this, all these contaminants were just leaching directly into the bay. And so most of the beaches on the peninsula were closed. I remember going over there and just being totally bummed out because we couldn't swim anywhere. And then And now I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was Peninsula State Park. Was that beach closed this summer then, too? And so I'm from Marinette on the other side of the bay, and I remember seeing this horrific map where it showed the peninsula, and it just showed all of these red areas where the beaches were contaminated, and then there was kind of like this vague drift where some of our beaches were maybe being affected. And then also, if you could comment on next summer, I'll be living just north of Marinette, and I'm madly in love with swimming in both the bay and Lake Michigan and Lake Superior in particular. And I was wondering if you could comment on the conditions of the bay near, like up on M35 near, namely like Wells Park, or there's a smaller park, Fox Park. And I think once you get up there, it seems like you're kind of getting beyond the bay and you're getting more into the lake at large. And I was just wondering what that region, if there's been any improvements in the bay in particular. There's a couple of beaches in Marinette Menominee that a lot of us swim at regardless, and I just wonder what, you know, if you know anything about the bay.
Okay.
Wow, lots of good questions in those comments. Thank you. Where to start? We're certainly well aware of the challenges both in Green Bay and then up on the Dora Peninsula. The Dora Peninsula, as the caller mentioned, has what's called karst topography, very shallow surface to bedrock. That is the amount of soil before you get to bedrock, and then this karst is very fractured, and so you can get a lot of things running through right straight to aquifers, or even out to nearby waterways like Michigan or Green Bay. So we've been doing a lot of work in the Wisconsin DNR to address this, as have county governments and county conservationists. We've got pretty new and sweeping rules on dealing with this polluted runoff from both urban and agricultural sources, and have some new rules just in the last 2 years on requirements for what larger permitted farms can and cannot do with the manure, especially in the wintertime. We've been doing our best to address that. One of the other challenges, though, that's been happening is when you have those excess nutrients that are going into waterways, the problem associated with that has been a little exacerbated by invasive species, particularly in Lake Michigan. Ones in particular, zebra mussels and quagga mussels, filter a lot of water, and that clears up the water. The problem with that is it actually takes plankton, which are necessary to food sources for the fishery. But the other problem in terms of beach closures and algae blooms, et cetera, is that increased clarity means that the sun can penetrate much deeper into the water, and as a result has caused an explosion of algae blooms up and down Lake Michigan coast, which is a particular type of algae called Cladophora, which has been a very difficult problem to control, and has gotten worse thanks to the invasive species. So we have seen a number of beach closures associated with that. So you put all of these things together, the number of aquatic invasives out there, and certainly nutrient challenges that we've had, and it creates some difficulties up and down the beach. But again, I mean, back to the good news is we've been trying to put in place a number of things to address it at the state level, and also on the federal level. We now have this Great Lakes Restoration Initiative that specifically targets one of the five areas that it focuses on, is how to deal with nearshore health and non-point source pollution. So increased beach monitoring, forecasting, sanitary surveys, support for nutrient management, nearshore monitoring, these are all things that are on the list to be addressed with these additional federal resources.
Thank you so much, Adam, for your call. We go next to Larry from Fond du Lac. Hi, Larry.
Hey, good morning, Kathleen, and to your guest. I have two questions. I think you mentioned there's a $400 million federal grant, which is taxpayer money, to clean up the Great Lakes. That's my first question. How much are the polluters going to contribute, the actual polluters going to contribute to that problem? And you also mentioned the Fox River has been one of the biggest cleanups in the world right now. How much are the polluters there contributing to the problem?
Sure, good questions. The Great Lakes Restoration Initiative is targeted at, as I said, there's five different areas. Generally speaking, when you're talking about where the funding is going in terms of areas of concern or where you have toxic cleanups from past industrial pollution, it is to fund those cleanups where there is no longer a responsible party. And unfortunately, we have a fair number of those where you had pollutants contributed by companies, manufacturing concerns that have, you know, disappeared in some cases decades ago. And so there has to be some money from somewhere to clean up that contamination. Where there is a responsible party, certainly both at the state and federal level, those folks are expected to pay the cost of the cleanup. And in the case of the Fox River cleanup, that is being funded by the responsible parties there. Largely speaking, it's several paper companies that are funding most of the work. So it's not tax dollars that are going to clean that up. But this $400 million in federal dollars, somewhere between $400 to $475 million, is going to things like habitat restoration, as I said, beach monitoring, increase in terms of dealing with invasive species, wildlife protection, restoration, those sorts of activities.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Larry. And time for one more phone call for you, Todd. It's Lee from Okachi. Hi, Lee.
Hi. My question is concerned about the Asian carp or the flying carp that are coming up through the Chicago Trench, and the Army Corps of Engineers still hasn't turned up the fence to full power. I'm wondering what your comments would be about that. And also, when you dredge, what do you do with the muck? Thank you.
Let me take the Chicago Ship Canal issue. This is one that we're very concerned about. These Asian carp are very prevalent in the Mississippi River system, places like the Illinois River, and they're very close to getting into Lake Michigan, which we are very concerned would have significant adverse impacts on the Lake Michigan fishery. So we have been working closely with other states in the region, the US EPA, and certainly with the Army Corps, to make sure that this barrier gets up and running. At one point, funding was actually stalled in Congress a few years ago, and each of the states, even though all of us were in difficult straits, came forward with some money to help keep that project moving forward. Because those carp are getting so close to the barrier now, we've had ongoing discussions. In fact, I'll be in a conversation tomorrow with counterparts from other states to talk about some other measures that we'll be looking to contemplate and take if, in fact, it looks like that barrier is going to take longer than we would like to get up and fully functioning here in the next couple of months.
And how did they get here? In the first place,
it's nobody's absolutely sure, but at least one source appears to be some aquaculture farms down in the Arkansas area.
Really?
I think that they were introduced there and escaped from a couple of those places.
Oh, sometimes it comes down to what in the world were people thinking, right?
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Todd. Let us know what happens at the conferences, and we'll keep on the story. Thank you.
happy to join you, and sorry I couldn't join you for the full hour, but I know Mr. Davis will be an excellent guest for you in the second half of the hour.
Thank you. Todd Ames, our guest this first half hour, Water Division Administrator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and Vice Chair of the Great Lakes Commission. He'll be keynoting later this week at the 6th Biennial State of Lake Michigan and the 9th Annual Great Lakes Beach Association Conference, both of them taking place right here in Milwaukee. Thank you, Lee, very much for your call. Cameron Davis is with us now, Senior Advisor to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator. He provides counsel to Administrator Lisa Jackson on the Obama administration's Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. He coordinates Great Lakes policy and funding initiatives with more than one dozen federal agencies and with state, municipal, tribal, business, and civic stakeholders. The focus of this work involves restoring habitat, reducing pollution, preventing the introduction of invasive species, reducing runoff, and enhancing coastal health for people, fish, and wildlife. He started as a volunteer, actually, serving as a litigating attorney and law teacher at the University of Michigan Law School before serving as president and CEO of the Alliance for the Great Lakes. He lives in Chicago and in Washington, D.C., and he lives across the street from Lake Michigan. And he and his family try to swim in the lake several times a week, but only when it's warm enough. Michigan can be cold. I used to wait until August 15th, August 16th. That's about the swimming time, but I didn't go this year. Cameron, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about money first. There's what is it, $400 million, $450 million targeted for the Great Lakes? And I think the Senate did something in the last few days. Can you tell me about where this money is targeted and if we're getting a big influx of money?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me on.
Our pleasure.
The money that you're talking about, Kathleen, is really a reflection of President Obama's commitment to massive restoration of the Great Lakes. We have never seen the kind of budget proposals we've seen or are seeing now, which I think is great news. And it's also a reflection of Administrator Jackson's commitment to making the Great Lakes a national priority for restoration at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The budget proposal by the White House came in February at $475 million earlier this year for what we're calling the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. And the House of Representatives in Washington approved it at that level, and now the Senate has approved it at $400 million. We're waiting to see how the House and Senate will resolve that difference. But either way, it really means great things for the Great Lakes.
Mm. And is it targeted for certain things, invasive species or runoff pollution, or how is it targeted, Cameron?
You had the list perfectly in between Mr. Ames and myself there. It will be targeted at some of the most difficult problems and threats that are facing the waters that we all love in this region. So, for example, invasive species, which can get into the Great Lakes and unravel this very delicate food web that we have. Sport fish and really the kind of some of the cultural icons in Wisconsin and that threaten the proud outdoor heritage that we have in the Midwest. So things like quagga mussels and zebra mussels that can get in and ultimately harm fisheries like yellow perch, whitefish, and fish that we all love here. Another priority under President Obama's restoration initiative is cutting what we call non-point source pollution. That's pollution that runs off of land and can hurt how we try to use our coasts and how our coasts try to help the biology of the Great Lakes. Another area is cutting toxic pollution, both from the source and by cleaning up contaminated sediment areas of concern, of which we've got some really good success or emerging success stories in Wisconsin. Another area is restoring fish and wildlife habitat. And then a final area kind of cuts across all of what we call these focus areas, and that's making sure that we're able to account for all of those public dollars, making sure we're educating the next generation of decision makers, and so on. So it's really important that we attack these threats head on and comprehensively rather than nibble around the edges of them as we've done in the past.
Mm-hmm. Wax poetic, if you'd like, about the importance of the Great Lakes to this country and certainly to the Midwest region. They're so vital, aren't they?
You're absolutely right, and thanks for giving me the chance to wax. A big part of my job is policy work and reaching out to members of Congress, but it really all starts in one place, both for me personally and I think a lot of your listeners, and that is just a true passion for these amazing waterways. I know growing up as a boy a few blocks away from Lake Michigan, I was guilty of taking them for granted. Just they were always there, felt like they'd always be there. But today we know that that's not true, that the Great Lakes really are, as big as they are, really are exhaustible and very delicate. And we need to take the best possible care that we can of them because as large as they may seem to the eye, if we don't take care of them, they won't take care of us. And we really need for them to stick around and be healthy so that they can take care of future generations. They can continue to provide jobs and recreation and renewal for those of us who live, work, and play around this region.
Yeah, and water to keep us alive.
Yeah, hallelujah on that. As the world seems to get smaller with greater demand for water, it becomes much more acute that we understand that we are a relatively water-rich part of the world. We've got about 20% of the Earth's fresh surface water supply, and as demand grows, that supply is something that it becomes much more precious to all of us. So we really do need to take care of the Great Lakes. And fortunately, President Obama and Administrator Jackson understand that and have made a real commitment to doing just that.
Mm-hmm. What are some of those, we always like to hear success stories. You mentioned the success stories in Wisconsin dealing with toxic pollution. What are those stories, Cameron?
Well, one of them is when it comes to areas of concern, what we call toxic hotspot areas of concern. There are 30-plus toxic hotspot areas of concern around the Great Lakes, either on the U.S. side or shared with Canada on the U.S. side, that have been on the list for cleanup for more than 20 years. And that, in my mind, is unconscionable, that it's taken so long to get to these areas of concern. But the good news is that the U.S. EPA, with a great partnership from Todd Ames and the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, is moving very quickly and accelerating those cleanups really to the greatest extent possible. So in Wisconsin, we're working on cleaning up the Kinnickinnick River in Milwaukee, and we're expecting that cleanup ought to be complete about a month from now. That cleanup is underway. I know the Fox River cleanup is underway in the Green Bay area. Sheboygan is a cleanup that is underway. And so we really have some great emerging success stories coming in Wisconsin, perhaps more so than any other state around the Great Lakes. And again, that's a result of a great partnership with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. It's also a result of an understanding that the financial resources are coming, which are desperately needed to make sure those cleanups happen.
Mm-hmm. Also a result of the fact that we're just good here in Wisconsin, right?
That's right. Yeah. We love Wisconsinites.
And
cleaning up these toxic hotspots are really important because pollutants that were discharged years or decades ago that remain down in the bottom sediments of these industrialized harbors and rivers, it's not like they're out of sight, out of mind. They continue to be down there and recirculate through the ecosystem, through our waterways. They get into fish. People eat the fish.
Right.
And unfortunately, they hit some of the most sensitive populations among us the hardest. So children, women of childbearing years, subsistence anglers like tribes. And we need to make sure that we're safeguarding the health of the most sensitive populations among us.
Yeah. Cameron Davis, our guest this part of the show, senior advisor to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency administrator. He provides counsel to Administrator Lisa Jackson on the Obama administration's Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and you can call us. You can call us now if you would like, and we will answer the phone for you. 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls for Cameron, starting with Gregory from Nina. Hi, Gregory.
Hi, good morning.
Hello.
I one of the greatest experiences I had was on Sand Island and the Apostle Islands.
Oh.
I was at a YCC camp, and this was just before I think it was became a national park.
Mm-hmm.
We tore down an outhouse, and we had to dig all the junk out, and thousands of butterflies descended.
Oh.
On. It was just unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I've been up there for the past 20 or 25 years, and I was going to ask your guest, I don't see any butterflies or anything, and also the fish, I see a lot of lampreys and leeches. And I was wondering if your guest could comment, is that a global shift, or over the past 20 years I just don't see any butterflies.
Okay.
And I really don't see, the water's still clear, but I don't see a lot of fish.
Cameron?
Yeah, it's invasive species like lamprey are probably one of the most difficult and pressing issues that we're facing, so I'm glad you're recognizing that. Lamprey, for folks who don't know, is like a vampire eel. It's a horribly ugly fish that snakes its way to find other fish. It attaches to them and basically sucks the life out of them.
Mm.
They came in through the St. Lawrence waterway, ship canal or ship seaway in the late 1950s, early 1960s, and it's really decimated some of our native fish like lakefish, or lake trout, I should say, and it's really been problematic. I know the Great Lakes Fishery Commission and the Wisconsin DNR are working very hard to combat, and the tribes as well are working to combat those lamprey, but it's really emblematic of how we are letting other foreign species get into the Great Lakes, and these are species against which there really are no natural kinds of immune system for our Great Lakes. You can think of the Great Lakes as kind of like your body. You know, when you come into contact with somebody who is sick and has a contagious illness, those viruses or bacteria can enter you and they can make you sick. And that's what invasive species are a little bit like. Once they get into the Great Lakes ecosystem, the system really has no immune capability to ward off, to fend off, or eliminate those invasive species, and they can really take over. So that's a real problem.
And are most of them coming in on the hulls of ships, Cameron, or how are they getting here?
One of the access points, Kathleen, is through the ballast tanks of ships. When a big ocean-going ship starts, let's say, on the other side of the Atlantic, it will suck water into its ballast tank to help steady its voyage.
Uh-huh.
Over the ocean. It gets into the Great Lakes and then spits that water out, or spits out the residuals that are still in the tank. And the residual slop in the bottom of those tanks can have foreign organisms in them. I know that one of the things that's on people's minds is VHS, a fish virus that's gotten into the Great Lakes. We're not sure, but we think that may have come in through ballast tanks of ocean-going ships. But that's one, if not the primary, what we call vector for invasive species. But there are others as well. Bait fish, if they are organisms that are not endemic to a lake, can also hurt native fisheries, and there are artificially connecting waterways, such as the one that Todd Ames mentioned before in the Chicago area, where we are hoping that we're going to keep Asian carp from moving up the Illinois River system into the Great Lakes.
Right.
So those are a few vectors.
Yeah. And what about those ships? Are you inspecting those? Or that's a tall order to make sure that none of those invasive species get here.
That's right. The Coast Guard has the primary role for setting standards for discharges of ballast water and for inspections on board those ocean-going ships. And the Coast Guard just proposed a new set of standards recently. We're hopeful that when they kick in, they will reduce the risk of invasions quite a bit. And so that's good news that those standards are on the way. We desperately need them.
Thanks, Gregory, for your call. Let's go next to John from Stockton, Illinois. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. My question has to do with agriculture and also dealing with the issue of non-point versus point source pollution. There's a movement, I guess you would call it, or a tendency towards factory farms. You know, farms are becoming bigger, and they seem to be under a greater deal of regulation than smaller farms. So I was curious to know if an organization like the EPA or your organization might be more keen to see farmers growing larger and thus being subjected to more regulation as opposed to having a smaller number of family farms.
Sure.
You have more difficult to regulate.
Sure. Thanks for the question, John. I don't think the EPA has a position on what size a farm should be, but one of the things that we want to see is, regardless of what size the farm is, we want to make sure that polluted runoff does not enter our waterways. And Kathleen, I should have mentioned early on that the Great Lakes, the President's Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, involves 16 federal agencies, including the U.S. EPA. It's a massive undertaking. And one of our key partners in the effort, especially when it comes to agricultural runoff and trying to reduce that source of pollution, is the Natural Resources Conservation Service within the Department of Agriculture. Those are the folks who have people on the ground and are working with farmers day in and day out, and we're really relying on them very heavily to help to reduce runoff from agricultural operations over the long run. That's a critical piece of the effort to save the Great Lakes.
And thank you very much for the call, John. Let's go next to Kathy. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning.
Hi.
My question is, the Daily Herald here in Lake County, Illinois, has an article in today's paper about the shortage of science teachers. Is there any way to build interest for the Great Lakes and all land to be a course in science classes to pique the students' interest in becoming either science teachers or other jobs that would help combat the way things are going and the pollution that's occurring in the Great Lakes area?
Yeah, you need people to lead.
Kathy, thanks for the question. It's something that I'm very enthusiastic about under the President's Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. One of the things that I've seen over my 20-plus years of doing Great Lakes work is that if you try to teach kids science conceptually, you might get some reaction. But when you try to teach science through a real place that kids love or no, it helps that science come alive, and it helps kids take a more active interest in what science means in their daily lives. And so using Lake Michigan and the other Great Lakes as living laboratories for teaching science, I think, is one of the most effective and can be even cost-effective approaches for teaching science that we might have. And I know that there's a tremendous movement afoot by the Alliance for the Great Lakes and many others to try to get science into classrooms using the Great Lakes as a way to tell that story. It's a very effective tool. It can be if done right, and I know that there's a great deal of interest out there for doing that. So your observation is very astute.
Yeah. Well, tell me, we always like to hear personal stories. Cameron, tell me how you happen to be doing the work you're doing. You love science.
Science is a big part of the job, as is policy and law and economics. I grew up a few blocks away from Lake Michigan, and we used to take family picnics, my brother, sister, mother, and father, and I, down at the beach maybe every other Sunday afternoon during the summertime. And that was the first time I really remember marveling at just how big Lake Michigan seemed to me. And then I also remember walking along the beach and seeing my father pick up trash that he saw that everybody else seemed to walk by. And it made an impression on me that, you know, here's a man that I admire who is doing something that he doesn't have to do to try to help keep the shoreline and the lake clean. And that just that stuck a real lasting impression on me.
Yeah. Let's go next to Marianne from Marshfield. Hi, Marianne.
Hi. I'm wondering, is there a group of volunteers that try to protect the Great Lakes?
That's a good question. I know the Alliance for the Great Lakes has an Adopt-a-Beach program of volunteers. You know, I can speak to it because I was with the organization up until about 9 weeks ago. They have thousands of volunteers all around the Great Lakes, and at least when I was there, you could sign up online. And there are many other organizations that have volunteers all around the Great Lakes and in Wisconsin and some of the coastal cities as well. And I just think it's so important to volunteer, having started as one 20-plus years ago, as a very important way to give back. Because after all, at the end of the day, the Great Lakes really are our Grand Canyon, and making sure that the Great Lakes are healthy and stick around for a long time to come is one of the greatest things that we can do to show some of our regional pride.
Thank you, Marianne, so much for your call. We go next to Lori from Ashland. Hi, Lori.
Hi. This is a really interesting show. I live in Ashland. I'm just up the street from the Superfund site. And I guess what I was wondering is there anybody looking at, like, policies with trash burning and dioxins? The dioxins that's kind of a big concern of mine. And it seems like it's just kind of ignored. I guess I haven't heard anything about policies about trash burning, because a lot of people up here do burn their trash. And
yeah, that's right. Well, one thing that you can do, Lori, is take a look at the Lake Superior Lakewide Management Plan, because I do know that others share your concern about trash burning, especially in your neck of the Great Lakes region, and that trash burning is something that's been considered as part of the Lake Superior Lakewide Management Plan, and I think you can access more about that Lakewide Management Plan online, because it is an important issue. Dioxins are one of the nastiest of the nasty chemicals that we have in the Great Lakes, and we need to all do our part to make sure we're reducing those inputs.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lori.
Thanks very much for your call. We go next to Dick from Waukesha. Hi, Dick.
Yes, hi, Kathleen and guests. I'd like you to go back to the saltwater ships. I've heard numbers and seen them in print that the saltwater ships do about $50 million worth of business in the Great Lakes, and they're the principal source of pollution, of introduction of invasive species. That versus the other businesses that go on, the commercial fishing, the sport fishing, the boating of all kinds, the beaching, if I can call it that, amounts to about $3 billion. And that is severely damaged already and maybe beyond hope. I don't know. Why are we not, with the ability to solve technical problems, I can't believe they can't solve that problem with the bilge dumping, clean it up so that it doesn't bring any more in.
Thanks for the question, Dick. Yes, invasive species coming in through the Great Lakes is a tremendous problem. And if you're interested in it, there's a wonderful book out there called Pandora's Locks by the author Jeff Alexander that goes into a lot of detail about the issue and the history of it. And it's a very good read. And that's why these Coast Guard rules that I mentioned before are so critically important, because we are behind the eight ball now. We've waited, I think, way too long to get these rules or get rules in place to be able to check the introduction of invasive species through ballast water. And the economic facts really are very enlightening. The sport fishery alone in the U.S. alone, the U.S. side of the Great Lakes, is worth about $7 billion or so annually. And so that's a significant investment, and we need to make sure it's that invasive species aren't unraveling our fisheries like they are right now. And being able to stop the discharge of invasive species and drastically reduce the risk of those invasions is such a key element to keeping the Great Lakes healthy.
Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for your call, Dick. Well, we're out of time. Cameron, thank you so much for your informative and lively presentation. Cameron Davis, Senior Advisor to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator. He provides counsel to Administrator Lisa Jackson on the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, which, as you heard him say, at $400 million was bill was passed by the Senate, more by the House. So looks like the Great Lakes restoration will be getting somewhere between $400 and $475 million to target invasive species and runoff pollution and contaminated bottomlands. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. Thanks also to Todd Ames from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources for being with us the first half hour of our program. John Treader, our very able on-air producer. Thanks to John. And thanks, everybody, for all of your interesting calls. We'll be with you again tomorrow from 9 to 11. So stay tuned. Lots of interesting conversation ahead. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.